I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow Podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves, and what better way to take care of ourselves than to understand more about our bodies. This series, I've teamed up with Fitbit. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better and understand your health with insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as my Fitbit helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Being partnered with Fitbit is inspiring, as they're encouraging everyone to make positive changes, and I hope this podcast does too. Last week on the Good Glow podcast, I spoke to Kieran Byrne. He was diagnosed with leukemia after returning home from honeymoon. He spoke to me about how the power of positive thinking, support and music got him through the tough times. This is a two-part episode, so if you haven't listened to the first one, I'd advise you to go back and listen now. I hope you enjoy.
Like, it is just you who has it. You know, whatever cross you're carrying, whether that's illness or anxieties or mental stress or whatever. And so there's a time when you need to get yourself over that and moment. And that was one of those moments when being on that bike, and, you know, it was fantastic feeling, you know, getting off it. And yeah, it was great.
So you went then in for your transplant shortly afterwards.
Yeah. So the transplant. So fast forward then, we got out. So what happens at that point is I was still in remission. And at that point, you have the conversation where transplant was discussed. The transplant is a way of ultimately giving you, in my mind, a cure. Okay. Because chemotherapy could give you a cure too. There's two options. If you're kind of in a, what they would call, a good risk profile, you could potentially treat this with chemotherapy only. And lots of people treat it with chemotherapy only. So they get another round or two of chemotherapy and they go on and they live a normal, healthy life. And that's absolutely fine. That works for a lot of people. But there's a significant number of people that chemotherapy, the chances of relapse would be very high, 50% in the first year. You know, they're 50% in the first couple of months. And they're the numbers that you're talking about. Or you could go for a transplant where there is still a chance of relapse, and there's a chance of relapse for me, but it's significantly lower in my case anyway. Mm. Some people might only have the option of going for a transplant because their profile is bad, so they kind of know it'll come back. So there's lots of different kind of paths for different people, and it's important to point that out. For me, one of the interesting things was the test that determined whether I'd go for chemotherapy or transplant. One of the key tests they do actually failed, didn't work, didn't give me a result. And so I was like, okay, well, what do I do now? You know, I was like, so am I good? Well, we know you're not good from the markers. So am I bad? Well, we know you're not bad from the markers. So like, what am I? And so they were like, well, you're kind of medium. And I'm like, well, what's mean? Like, am I, if there's 10 people in a room, am I guy number six? Am I guy number four? Like, what side of medium am I on? So from the other kind of tests they can do, they kind of say, look, you're kind of medium to good. So, which is still not great for mm-hmm. me. But it kind of left me with a choice that I could do chemo or transplant.
Okay.
Which was mind-blowing because I had expected just transplant. Mm. But if you're doing transplant, ultimately what happens is that you get a transfusion of stem cells from a donor. And that donor is either a sibling donor, a brother or sister, or a unrelated donor, what they'd call a matched unrelated donor. So that's a stranger, goes to a database of donors, and they, over time, they find the right donor. That's European-wide, worldwide, I think. And they get a donor for you. So, you know, it's in an ideal world, you have a brother or sister who's a donor. Again, it's important to stress that if you have an unrelated donor, from what I've seen being on the treatment, it's still fine. Like the outcome, the ultimate outcome is still the same.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's nice to have a brother or sister as a donor for a couple of different reasons. And so I had 7 in my family, you know, including myself, but you're still not guaranteed that you have a donor there. And so they had got blood tests to basically identify if they were donors, and they did the blood tests, and thankfully 2 came back who were donors, Jude and Declan, 2 brothers, which was fantastic news. So the consultant delivered the news to me. He said, look, this test failed for you. And I was going, right, okay. And he said, so we're going to look, he said, but you know, transplant care on, I think, is your best course of action, but I can't say that. You need to have the consulting, you need to have the meeting with St. James's, who are the only hospital in the country that do transplants, and make that decision ultimately yourself. And so I was sitting there going, right, okay. And then the clinical nurse came in and with the results of the donor test, and she said, Kieran, great news, you have 2 donors. And I left, like, yeah. He was like, okay, he's kind of looking at me, and I was like, look, that's all the positive news I need. I'm leaving. And he was like, but like your side of genetics, I said, I don't care about it. Let's leave the negative stuff. I've 2 donors. I'm going for transplant. We kind of knew from day one that this was my path. I'm going home to celebrate this. This is fantastic. And it was lovely because I rang my family, and all of them were, in a way, disappointed that it wasn't them, because they all wanted it to be them.
God.
And they were fighting between themselves, and they're like, I bet it's me, I bet it's me, I bet it's me. And they all, and my brother Andrew had come home from the States like 4 times, like flown over Seattle at huge expense, and had been there like throughout all this, and he was there, and they were all like, oh, who's the donor? And you know, it's my sisters, and my mom, God bless her, was like, I want to be. And
oh, that's
I was
amazing.
Like, mom, you can't be the donor. You're not my brother or sister. But she was still like, oh, I'd like to be. And friends were like, oh, I'd like to. And I was like, no, you can't be donors either, you know. But to get 2 donors was really fantastic. And, you know, I'm like I said, so close to them. It was just the best news to me. And so I chose to ignore the cytogenetic test. I was like, look, you know, I can't do anything about that. And if you look that up online too, you find all sorts of negative things around how that could affect your potential outcome and so on. But again, I can't control that. Mm. So we just plowed ahead. So we went over to James's, had the talk with them, which was upsetting because it's a very serious conversation. But really coincidentally, when we went over, I thought I'd be starting transplant June or July. And they said, Kieran, like, as it turns out, because they only have 20 beds. And this is, I hate to say, but it's a bit of a production line. Because transplants are used to treat lots of other things, lymphomas and there's a range of different conditions. It's not just leukemias or blood disorders. There's lots of different things it's used to treat. So they've only got 20 beds at a time, and you know, people have ups and downs. So you can imagine the logistics in that. So they said, Kieran, as it turns out, we have a bed on April 23rd, which was the day of my 40th birthday.
Like, oh my
to start
God.
This. And I mean, you know, like, you think about all the years you're on planet Earth and everything building up to you, and you know, it was bittersweet, but yeah. I mean, I took that as a sign. It's a really positive sign, you know, I mean, like, best birthday present, like a new life, you know. So yeah, it's lovely.
It's amazing. How did you feel after that? Was it tough going?
The transplant, so when I got the news about transplant, went back to begin with the family and discussed with them chemo or transplant, and we were never really going to do chemo, but it was kind of, I liked to think that I had a decision to make, but I didn't. I mean, you know, we all knew it was going to be a transplant. But we had a couple of days before going in, and as the day came closer and closer, I was frightened. I really was. And I had 1 or 2, particularly the night before I was due to go in. It was the bank holiday weekend, the April bank holiday weekend, and it just, I was really upset just leaving to get in the car. And my mom was in, and it was a very emotional moment for myself and Denise and my mom. And I really felt at that moment, like, it was just tough. And then going to James's Hospital, because I'd been in the matter for all my treatment, it was a completely new environment. And it's the business end of things in a way, because it's a highly isolated ward because of this risk of infection. And, you know, transplant, no matter what way you look at it, is a very serious procedure. Not procedure, I'm kind of, because the procedure itself is actually fine, but just that part of it, it is serious. And so mortality rates are statistically, you know, high at those things. And so, you know, the room was different, the view was different. And so I found that part difficult to make that transition. And some people would start there. Some people would be admitted to James's from day one. And so they were used to, they might be used to that side of things. But transitioning from one environment to the next was tough. And so at that moment in time, you're kind of, this is around 12 in the fight, you know, like your energy levels are low. And I one thing I kept saying to myself was just, Kieran, finish strong, finish strong, you know. And at times it was tough to go to shower. Denise said, Kieran, would you not just go in and have a shower? You'd feel better. And I always did feel better. Once you start playing the music, uplifting beats, you start feeling good, you know. But it was tough. And I think a word that I've used to describe it is I developed a sense of apathy about it, where I just disconnected myself from the process in a way. And apathy can be a negative thing, where you just don't have an interest in something. And so I kind of didn't really have an interest in the chemo, because the chemo and the lead into the transplant is particularly intense. It's 7 days of more or less around the clock, 24/7. It's more or less. And it's a stronger chemotherapy. I just took that, you know, chemotherapy, and I kind of had enough of chemotherapy at that stage. This was up to 60 odd bags of the stuff, and I was like, I just want this to be finished. But it was all leading to a point of the transplant itself, you know. And I think that there was that kind of, you're just fed up, you know. You've 7 days to go, they're counting down, they go day minus seven, day minus six. You feel like an astronaut that's about to launch off into the atmosphere, you know. The transplant itself, I think one point that I'm keen to get in here is the controversial topic, I think, in our generation, is the topic of faith and a belief in something. And I think that, you know, for me, I have a faith. Now, lots of people don't, and that's absolutely fine, and that's okay. I personally think that there's a belief that there's something bigger beyond us, and whether that's religious or whether that's spiritual or whether that's whatever. But I definitely feel that at times that really carried me through, you know, and it really helped. And I never felt alone on the journey, because I prayed, and I pray now. I pray every night, and I'm grateful, and I'm humble, and, you know, I don't subscribe to, you know, some of the teachings maybe that I was brought up to believe. And I don't necessarily believe that there's a guy who coincidentally looks like Santa Claus sitting on the cloud. But I do believe that there is something. And so I prayed a lot to my father and to people I knew and so on. And at times like that, it really helped me and gave me strength and great great positivity. And again, this is like reaching into your toolkit, you know, where the medicine had kind of been doing its job, and I was kind of had enough of that. And you know, you can't really see as many people in James's because of the nature of what you're going through. So the marching band is gone. And, you know, you don't have the energy for the friends anyway.
Yeah.
And so it's down to Denise and, you know, your family. And you really have cut back visitors. And I kind of describe it, and you might be able to relate to it, that, you know, they kind of got you to base camp of Everest, but you need to take those final steps up to the summit nearly on your own. But there's a part of this. And so in those moments, your faith is important, you know. And I think there was always signs along the way that people were at my side, or there was something there. And I think in those moments, it really helped. So, you know, there is a story that, I don't know, I want to get too emotional, but there is one or two things that happened, which kind of would it may sound cheesy to some, but like Robin Redbreast. I don't know why, but they've always had a spiritual connection for me, and they do for a lot of people. They kind of remind me of my father. And it was weird because when I started off in the Mater Hospital, the first day I got my chemotherapy, I was sitting on the bed and I was frightened. I didn't know what to expect. And the green bag comes in and they hook it up on the drip stand. And as the very first bit of chemo was being administered, I'd gone to TV and it was just a picture of this massive robin redbreast on the TV who kind of had no right to be there. This picture of this bird, and it gave me great strength at that moment. And I went and I looked at Denise, she looked at me, and we both were like, oh my God, hairs on the back of her neck. And she was like, that's your dad, you know? And it felt like that to me. And what happened was with James's, when I was in this room, and it wasn't a pleasant environment for me, you know, the room was dark, and I was looking out at essentially a barren car park thing, building site, and there wasn't much natural light. And you know, the hospital itself is fantastic, it's not a reflection of the hospital, it's just a reflection of maybe my mindset in the room I was in. That particular room wasn't great. And then there was some building work going on, so a port cabin was kind of put in front of the window, and there was no natural light, and the transplant was due to happen that same later that day or the following day, and I was feeling really just down and in the, you know, in the trenches. And I was talking to Denise, and I'd had a little bit of a reaction to the chemo, not much, but I just felt battered at that point. And I just heard a tapping, and I was talking to Denise, and I was going, you know, we were yapping away, but I could just hear this tapping noise, and I thought it was a builder or something, nailing something lightly, or I didn't really know what it was. I just kept hearing it. And we looked over, and it was a little robin redbreast tapping the window with his beak.
God.
And he had no right to be there. Like, it was a desolate spot. We weren't going to find any worms there.
Oh,
and he was actually flying and at the window and tapping it. And it was an incredibly emotional moment for both of us, you know, just to, from the moment I started my chemo to the moment it ended.
What did that do for you?
Look, I mean, you know, if you open yourself up to that, up to just allowing the fact that there's something more than us out, there's something that we will never comprehend. And so people, as humans, we've tried to put meaning on these things by forming religions and by forming, you know, tribes and by building great churches, or, you know, and be whatever religion you want to be it a Catholic, Hindu, Muslim, they're all the same, in my opinion, that, you know, different doors to the same house, or even if you just believe in spirituality. But if you open yourself up to the fact that there's something that we don't understand that connects us all, that makes people on Instagram reach out and say, I'm rooting for you, I want to get you over that line from day one. Those medical teams, those doctors, those nurses, my friends, my family, what connects us as humans? I mean, the very essence of love. If you open yourself up to that and allow that into your life and see those signs and see those positivity, like, it exists and it made the difference. Like, yeah. And people say, oh, made the difference, and it's a throwaway comment. No, actually, it made the difference. Like, and that was one of those things that you open yourself up to. And some people, you know, the old saying's true, you never find an atheist on a sinking ship, you know? Like, if you are actually open to this, your belief, and it doesn't need to be, like I said, a regular churchgoer. That's not, I'm not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. If you open yourself up to the fact that people who've gone before you are the world around you, the universe around you, that there's something out there and people are connected through the raw emotion of love, and that then things start happening, you know. And so what happened was, this is true. It was actually the morning of the transplant, because I'd been feeling terrible, as I said, and I forgot this part. Soon after that, the nurse comes into the room and he said, Kieran, great news. I don't know who's looking down on you, he said, but we have a lovely new room for you. And they wheeled me out of that room into a much bigger, brighter room. My spirits and my health, because that morning I had a little bit of vomiting, which I had never had. The vomiting disappeared. My spirits went up. And by the time transplant arrived in the afternoon, I was feeling in great spirits. And Denise and my brother would say the same. They saw me that morning. I was wiped out. I thought, this day has come where it's supposed to be a really positive thing. I'm feeling really down. I'm feeling sick. I'm vomiting a bit. To the little robin appearing on the window, and suddenly I'm sitting up in a bed, the vomiting stops, I'm in a new room, I feel fantastic, and I'm looking forward to this transplant giving me a new life. And, you know, the transplant itself, then, my brother Jude, who was the donor, had been that morning donating his stem cells through a procedure that's like a blood transfusion, essentially. Very painless, you know, over a couple of hours. And so they prepared the stem cells, which are kind of in a bag, like you get blood, say, and they hooked it up onto the drip stand, and it's actually golden in colour. It's nice because it's kind of a, you know, it just looks like a positive thing that you're getting, you know, superpowers. And they hooked that up to my line. And my brother Jude was sitting beside me, and Denise was sitting beside me, and they were like, do you want to put on some music, you know? And I put on U2 Beautiful Day, because I love the way it opens, you know, my heart is a bloom. And it started flowing in, and I just felt ecstatic. I felt,
oh my God,
the physical, it's not an operation. I thought it was. I thought it'd be some Frankenstein moment. They cut you open and transplant you. But it's just this fluid flown into you. And, and you know, the nurses do these things 2 or 3 a day or several a week. So to them, they kind of were detached from the emotion of it. There's no medical team. A nurse just simply comes in and goes, oh, I've your transplant here, you know. Like, it's strange because from a clinical point of view, it's a non-event, a complete non-event. But if you allow yourself to be grateful and to be humble and to think about it, it was an extremely positive event. This is, Ciarán, your new life starts. Like, you're getting this. Isn't this amazing? And so I felt just out of this world.
And your brother was sitting beside you.
My brother sitting beside me, Denise sitting beside me. Obviously, you can't invite in the whole family tree because, you know, you're only allowed 2 at a time.
Okay.
From a isolation point of view. And so I felt that my brother had been my donor. You know, it was, I would have liked to have had, obviously, my mom and brothers and sisters and so on. But you have to pick someone. And Jude had been the donor, being there. I thought it was nice for him to finish that part of the journey with me. And so we, half an hour, we watched this the stem cells flowing into me through the Hick line. And you know, it was only a matter of time for Jude to start commandeering the playlist and putting on his music, which is rubbish. But it was just, and to look at Denise, you know, and just to, like I said, there's chances that things, you could relapse or so on, but like, you'd have to be unlucky. I'm saying, look, this, I'm not going backwards here. This is it. The line is drawn. I'm moving on. And this is the closing this chapter, you know. And at that point, I nearly made that decision.
Is that a complete standout moment for you in terms of, like, when I shaved my head, I never thought it would be up there in the top 5 nights of my life.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of way. It was like my wedding day, the day my baby was born, the night I shaved my head. And then you go through this experience. Did it feel like a very special moment?
You know, at that moment, not. At that moment, it did. It really did. But even looking back on it now, you get a sense of perspective on it.
Yeah.
And so I have more perspective on it now, and I appreciate it even more now, you know, and as time went on. It was like I said, just a culmination of leading up to that point, and just to get there and just be able to share it with Denise and June, and ring my family, and, you know, that's done, and reach out to my friends. And it was just, it has to be a standout moment, doesn't it, really? I mean, like, because you are, like, if you don't get that transplant at that moment in time, like, one of the consultants and James has said to me, like, the plane has left the runway. If you don't get this now, you're dead, because you've taken the chemo. It's kind of wiped out everything. And, you know, like, there's no going back, you know. But from a medical point of view, a non-event. From a spiritual, emotional, positivity, all that side of things. It's huge, and let's not deny it, and let's not say it is huge. And sometimes we've a tendency, I was nearly at times embarrassed on the day to kind of be like that in a way, because the nurse was looking at me and she was like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know, feck it, this is a big deal for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take this as a big deal, you know, because it is. So it's funny because that happens over half an hour, and then the rest of the day you have the elation and you have medication that they've given you to help you through the initial days, like steroids, for example, be some of the medication. And so there's that sense of elation, but it's also mixed with an artificial boost physically. But after transplant, it's really when the risks come in the immediate aftermath and the side effects of the chemotherapy come. So you've kind of gone up Everest, you've reached the top, you've waved your flag, and then you go, oh, I've got to get back down. And that's treacherous, you know. And that's the real funny one, because, you know, going back down sometimes is harder than going up.
Yeah. And was that the 100 days that we saw Denise speaking about on Instagram?
Yeah. So the 100 days is an interesting one, because medically, and I'm not an expert necessarily, but medically, it's not like you get to 100 days and then you're done. Like, medically, the 100-day period, a lot of the initial treatment post-transplant happens. So, for example, a common thing that most people will get is graft versus host disease. And that's where your new immune system attacks basically your body. And that can range from mild to very severe. Now, thankfully, the medication that you get now and the treatment in James, and I have to say they've been excellent in terms of the treatment. You know, I started off with very solid foundations and treatment from the Mater Hospital. And then again, James's public hospital, excellent treatment in terms of the transplant and the follow-up treatment. But post-transplant, what happens is you're back in a neutropenic phase because you've got this chemotherapy that's led into transplant and you're particularly vulnerable. Then you've got the risk of this graft versus host coming on, and you've got other things like mucositis where you get these ulcers that potentially, inflammation of the mouth that's particularly, it's particularly nasty, and it goes down your gastrointestinal tract and so on, and it can become a big thing. But for me, thankfully, I maintained the positivity afterwards, and I just was like, look, they were like, look, it's going to, this whole part of the transplant probably take 5 to 6 weeks. I was like, I'm out of here in 3. They were like, well, you know, you're not. And I was like, no, I am, you know. And then the transplant happened. So I was at day 0, and they were like, you know, typically you'd be out maybe day 30. And I was like, I'm getting out a lot sooner than that. And they came in, you know, the first couple of days, and they were like, look, how are you feeling? And, you know, the mucositis is probably kicking in now. And there was a little bit starting to kick in. Your taste buds were shot, my mouth. But I just decided, I'm going to lie here. I'm not going to say anything in terms of, I'm going to rest myself. I'm going to allow my body to heal. And it's a strange thing. I'm going to allow my body to heal. And so they were saying, well, would you like to take some morphine for the pain? And I was like, well, I'm not in pain. I said, like, you should be able to tolerate some pain, you know. Like, I didn't just want to reach for medication the minute I got it. And so they were saying, well, you know, your bloods will come up in a couple of weeks. And I was like, I think they're going to come up sooner, you know. And Denise was going, every day she'd come in, and May 1st was transplant, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, you know, the early days of May are ticking on. And then we were coming up to, and every day Denise would write in the whiteboard, a nurse come in, and they'd have your counts of your bloods, you know. And it was coming up to our wedding anniversary, the 11th of May. And Denise was like, it was like my birthday. Would you like to do anything? And said, well, I can't do anything in the hospital, but would you like to exchange a card or that? And I was like, no, they're trigger points. We'll celebrate it another time. And, you know, and that was tough for me and tough for Denise. But we were looking at the bloods, and again, they were like, well, maybe to 20, maybe at some stage the bloods will start coming up. But sure enough, the 11th of May, the nurse walks in, 0.1 of a neutrophil goes up on the board. So
stop.
So, you know, you start seeing, when you look back, you know, you start connecting the dots, you know, admitting on the day of my birthday, you start seeing the impact of Robin, and, you know, the day of our wedding anniversary, the blood started coming back. And, from that point on, they shot up. They shot up, and I was out more or less that weekend, day 16 days.
Wow.
So I kind of, you know, look, whatever blood my brother Jude has, and combined with the positivity that everyone else has around me and Denise and that, I thought it was the best wedding anniversary present, you know, we could have got. And, you know, they've been on the march since, and everything since then has been really, really strong. And I've had days where, like, in the early days, so what happens is when you come out in the early days, you have to go back three times. Well, I was going back three times a week to get top-ups of things, like, you know, when you take medication, it might have an effect, like my kidneys, my creatinine levels were very high, so you need to get fluids to bring them under control, and different things that the medical side, you know, so they're kind of calibrating your body, let's put it that way, with medication, and they have to keep a very watchful eye on you because of this graft versus host. I got a little bit of that. Thankfully, it wasn't too serious. It was a kind of a rash on my body, which they treat with medication again. And it's actually a really positive thing because it shows that it's working. It's a bit like my mother says, you know, you want to hear a newborn baby cry, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. But you don't want them to cry too much.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first couple of weeks post-transplant, you're in James's three times a week, and then it's twice a week, and then you're down to once a week, and they're just checking the bloods. And so a lot of those things kind of built up to this 100-day moment. And 100 days is a lovely milestone because risks go down over time. So the risks of developing things and relapse and so on. And so the 100 days was only last week, I think. And, you know, it was lovely. And again, when it came to it, because I feel great and I feel so, like, I feel like I'm back to normal. I feel like not a bother, you know. I think that there is a tendency when 100 day comes around to be like, oh, it's not a big deal, it's not a big deal. And Denise was like, well, I cancelled the balloons. And she had balloons. And she was like, and I've rolled back on celebrating the day because you don't want to make a big deal of it. But then when the day came, then she was like, well, will we get a cake? I was like, well, I like a cake. Will we get a car? Well, I'd like a car. And when we celebrate, well, I'd like a little bit of a celebration. So, you know.
You just don't know how you're going to feel until that day comes.
I didn't. And I thought, well, could this be a trigger point and could I be emotional about it? But actually, I wasn't. And, you know, I felt that it's really important to separate for others too. Mm. Everybody's been on this journey with me, you know, and all my family and all my friends, and, you know, and so it's important. Look, it's important to celebrate your wins in life, you know, and we don't do that enough sometimes, you know. You kind of, it's grand. And even the little things, you know, I celebrate them now, you know, and we're going to have my 40th at some stage. I was going to do an announcement.
Can I come?
Of course. So it's taking place next round. You know? So we're going to do a 40th, and we're going to have all my friends, and we're going to have a good night. I'm off the booze at the moment, or maybe forever, who knows, because it's been great in that sense too, because of, you know, medication and the lights that you're on. But beyond the Heineken Zeros, I think
they taste the same, my husband says.
They do taste the same. They do taste the same. And sure, if you're already, you know, enjoying life, you know, with as I am at the moment, then you don't need it. But, you know, it's important to celebrate it. So on the day itself, we had a little private, you know, celebration with a cake. And it was lovely. And I was grateful that Denise did. And that's Denise down to a T. You know, she'll always, you know, do that. And it was lovely. And we're going to celebrate our wedding anniversary. You know, we'll go away. And then in time when I'm allowed to travel, at the moment I can't because my immune system is still building back up. So that's the thing. It takes like maybe 12 months for it to get fully back up to speed. So I just need to keep the head down and, you know, I can't.
Do your job.
Follow the advice. And, you know, and that just means we're going for nice lunches. And, you know, I'm out and about, but you won't find me in Croke Park. But yeah, so just do your job and follow the advice you've been given and respect the advice you've been given, and, you know, you're medically, you're fine.
Is life very different for you now? Have you, like, obviously you've slowed down, but
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like after my cancer, like, you just kind of look at things very differently, don't you?
Yeah, like, you know, it's amazing because what happened was, when I came out from James's for transplant after day 16, The matter the two times I'd come out, I'd kind of come out and got in the car and gone home, and I felt okay and I didn't feel that emotional. And when I got out of James's and sat in the car, I broke down, really broke down. And when I got home, I broke down. And I think it hit me at that point of what I'd been through, and it was over as such. And it was funny because I put on music, and again, music's been so important to me throughout this, but I put on music in the house and I went flying around the house dancing. And my mother and Denise were like, slow down, you're going to go back into Jesus. Then relax. I was like, I'm not relaxing, I feel amazing. No one's going to ever tell me again to relax. I feel so great. I'm out, I'm back, I'm alive, you know, like, no, I'm not sitting down. I'm dancing around this house all day long, you know? And I did. And about day 30 or day 40 post-transplant, I was doing okay, but we went through, the weather was rubbish in May, and my spirits had dropped a little, and I picked up a bit of a flu, a common cold, but I had to go back to James for a week, because at that moment in time, they have to be really watchful, and you have to respect that. And so I went back, but I fell down. But then I woke up one morning and just life was just different. I just had this sense come over me of just huge perspective, like you've touched on, and humility and gratitude. And I sat out in my back garden and I cried tears of joy, and I just felt amazing and just operating, like I say to my pals, like the Matrix and that movie Limitless at the same time. Like just a sense of awareness of the world around me and everybody around me, and love and hope and positivity, and it just flowing out of my body, and deeply spiritual as well. Just connection just to everyone who'd gone before, and just whatever I believe in above, and it was just incredible. And it was such a positive thing to get out of this. And you know, I was talking to Denise in the car, and I was saying to her that, you know, the journey itself, it's not like losing a loved one where you lose that person and you carry the pain of that person with you. And that's good in a way. I sometimes like that, because it reminds you of how much you love that person sometimes when you hold on to it. And, you know, I think about my dad, and it hurts. But at times, loads of really positive memories, but it hurts at times. And that's good because it reminds you. That person really meant a lot to me. But with what the illness I had, and I don't have it anymore. I don't have that. I could let go of that, but keep the positive stuff from it. Like I say, on one side I had leukemia, like that sucks. But on the other side, I gained loads of new friends. I had so much positivity. I have a new perspective. My work I've been going in a completely wrong direction with. I've ditched most of that. I have a new opportunity to explore new things in life. You know, myself and Denise always had a very strong relationship, but it's connected us at such a deeper level now. You know, I have a deeper level of connection with my brothers and sisters. I mean, I could go on for the next week about the positives that have come out of this, you know. And like, this is the thing, like my leukemia was ultimately treatable and curable but through transplant. And illnesses and be that things you're going through life, if it's mental illness, if it's physical illness, like it passes. But like the positivity allowed me to really, it really did help get me through it. But even in seeing it as what it is and being able to kind of leave it behind and not carry it with you, you don't need to carry these things with you. I don't feel the need to carry what I've been through with me. I feel like I can leave that behind but carry the positives from it. And so that's the thing. It's not like losing someone, you can carry some of that pain with you to remind you, you know, and you've lost a person. I've lost this cancer, leukemia, I've lost that things. I'm happy to leave that in the bin, thanks very much, you know. I'm happy to say I'm cured, I'm done, you know. And medics might say, well, there's a chance it is. Look, there's a chance I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. I'm as open out to anything as anybody else is, you know. And of course there's a chance. Jesus, like, we're all going to die. No one's won the lottery here, you know. But I think to leave behind that and just to say, for the rest of my, you know, and I hope I don't lose that. I hope that I can reach back. I was saying to Denise, I've put my thoughts down on paper. I actually wrote a book. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet.
It needs to be published.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, because it's so personal, and I'm only on the opening up part. Like, it's only the last couple of months, so it's still new to me. But I wrote, I have about 100 pages down, and it's just this part of my life. And Denise was saying, God, you could write more. And I said, no, because like, this is a part of my life that I've taken it, I've written about it. It was therapy for me. There's a lot of the journey, and then just the positivity, you know, and I'm happy to just put that to aside, and I don't feel the need to carry it on with, you know, I'll carry on the lessons from it, I'll carry on the positivity from it, I'll carry on all the good things I've got, but the rest I don't need to carry on. And I think for me, you know, I used to be like I said, anxious and so on, and in this country, particularly with men, guys like myself, we don't really talk about it enough. But what I will say is that by opening up, by, you know, saying I need help from day one, by allowing that into my life and being positive about it and just getting back up, and then being able to move on from it and accepting that you've moved on from it, not holding on to it, you know, like, and that's really helped. And I described recently to Denise, I said, it's like a stream, and you're watching these emotions go down that stream, you know, be that anxiety or pain or whatever. And I'm happy to watch them now go by me, where some people sometimes essentially they swim after it and they grab that emotion back to them, you know, just let it go, you know. And that's something now. And I feel fantastic. And I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't. I didn't, you know. And when I wake up in the morning, when I go to bed at night, I feel gratitude and I feel great. And, you know, my mom is still like Irish mothers, you know. Well, it's still early days, you know. And I'm like, it's not early days, you know. Like,
dance at me.
Where's the finish line? I do dance with her. We put on to Gypsy Kings, and I dance around the kitchen with her. Yeah, yeah. And she said, be careful now. I'm like, no. So it's been, you know, adversity can be a positive, and you know, it was tough. And look, there's still like, I still go in and I get my blood checkups, and I don't know what the future holds, but you know, I feel great, you know, I do.
I just wanted to thank you for coming in today. I feel so inspired after our chat. Thank you so much for everything, and I wish you health and happiness for you and your gorgeous wife going forward.
And to you too. Thanks for having me. And it's, yeah, I hope you've all enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, made possible by Fitbit. Fitbit wants you to be empowered by providing you with personalized data about your health so you can make positive changes to lead a healthier lifestyle. Life is about balance and action, not lots of distractions. Get to know yourself better and understand your health with Fitbit. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review, and follow me on Instagram at Georgie.Crawford. It.